Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio Mobile in Chicago today for the Big Ten Tournament. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. At one point, Nebraska has slowed this game to a crawl. They're in a 50-possession pace. All right, let me tell you what's good, okay? 65 to 70 possessions. That's about average. Well, Nebraska is beating Maryland 30 to 20 with a minute to go in the first half. They went on a 16-3 run over a six-minute span, and Bruno Fernando and Anthony Cowan have a combined 4 points in this game. 3 for Fernando and 1 for Cowan. We'll keep you updated on that as they head toward halftime. We'll talk with Matt Gelb in a moment from The Athletic about the Phillies. But first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Beal looks back at his head coach, Scott Brooks. Bryant comes out to set the screen. Beal cuts to his left. Vucevic on a bounce pass under the basket. Sadoransky feeds Bryant. Slam to hands. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner for Thomas Bryant. A 6-0 run for the Wizards. Wizards up by 10, 190, and Thomas Bryant with 21.
Ah, yes, the Wizards, life without John Wall last night, and a big call there. And again, we'll get you up today in Nebraska, Maryland. The next game up is Penn State, Minnesota. We're on beginning at 6:30 tonight. Tip-off set for 7 o'clock. Winner gets Purdue tomorrow. Matt Gelb joins us from The Athletic covering the Phillies. Great to have you with us. I know it's the first time we've had you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it very much. Obviously, the big story is Bryce Harper. But before they got Harper, it was my gut feeling in just watching the Phillies that I thought they were having a pretty good offseason to begin with before they got Harper. How did you view it pre-Harper?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, I mean, they, you know, objectively, you know, any way you look at it, they were having a terrific offseason. It's just that this was such an unusual offseason that you have two talents like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper available, and you know, the fact that they had been lining up for this offseason for a long time, it was going to be a disappointment had they got neither of those guys. But take that out of all of it, and look, I almost feel like JT Realmuto is sort of flying under the radar right now. He might be the best catcher in baseball, if not one of the best. They got him. You know, they added stability. I mean, I think they looked, you know, last season they were a young team. You know, they had a lot of guys who were playing in everyday roles who probably shouldn't have been in everyday roles, and they traded some upside, you know, sacrificed some upside for some reliability this offseason, and guys like Gene Segura and Andrew McCutchen and JT Realmuto and then Bryce Harper. I mean, you're adding guys who you expect to be out there pretty much every day, and then Gabe Kapler, the manager, is going to have a more set lineup. It's a more experienced lineup. You know, they're a little easier to project because there's just, you know, more stability, I think.
Which is interesting because Harper's not a big analytics guy. We know Kapler obviously is. And you say a more set lineup. Does that fit in with his philosophy as a manager to have a more set lineup?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think what we saw last season with all the mixing and matching was really, to me, a byproduct of the roster they had. They had a roster full of guys who were not able to hold down a regular spot in the lineup. They did not earn a regular spot in the lineup. And, you know, the few guys who did, like Rhys Hoskins and Cesar Hernandez and Carlos Santana before he was traded, they played every day. I mean, those guys were in there every day. And I know, you know, we tend to focus on the shuffling and a lot of the mixing and matching, and it did happen a lot. I just think, given the way the roster has changed, you know, what we saw last year isn't going to apply to this year. I think you're going to see most of this lineup out there every day. And I think, you know, maybe he'll look for spots here and there to get Scott Kingery in the lineup. He could play third base or second base or even a game in center field. But really, that's only going to happen like maybe once or twice or three times a week. Everybody else is going to be expected to be out there, be in their spot, and be in that lineup every day. Maybe, you know, against a few lefties, they try to hide Odubel Herrera, or against a few righties, they try to hide Michael Franco in the lineup. But I think for pretty much what it is, what you see is what you get, barring injuries. These guys are going to be out there every day.
In your opinion, Harper obviously can go out and get his own numbers. What is the domino effect, in your opinion, of Harper's presence in the lineup?
I mean, it just makes it look. I mean, you know, you're going to have teams late in games trying to match up against Bryce Harper, and that benefits everyone around him in the lineup. It benefits Reese Hoskins. It benefits, think about it. So, I mean, Michael Franco, who, you know, we thought was pretty much gone after last season, he's still here, but he might be batting eighth in this lineup. And this is a guy who, you know, was probably miscast as a middle-of-the-order bat. But does that mean that he's an unproductive player? I don't think so. I mean, if this guy is batting eighth for you, that's not bad. I mean, and let's be real, they're going to have to outscore a lot of teams. I mean, you know, there are questions about the pitching. You know, the defense was very suspect last season. It should be better this year, but it's not an elite defensive unit. They're going to have to score a lot of runs this season, and this is an offense that hasn't scored a lot of runs in a long time. I mean, ever since really 2009, even that 2010, 2011 teams, those were teams that were built on pitching and defense. This team is going to have to score runs, and I think given the ballpark they play in, you know, the way the game has trended, I think it's a good idea. You know, there are going to be questions about the rotation, but putting Harper in the middle of the lineup just moves everyone down a notch or up a notch. I think it just balances everything, too. You know, they needed left-handed power, and Bryce Harper is that. They really lacked that in the lineup before they acquired Harper. It just makes that unit better, and look, I mean, when you had a guy like that in the middle of the lineup, it just takes pressure off of everyone else. It really does, and certainly puts a lot of pressure, though, on Bryce Harper.
Dave Robertson also is a part of this mix. In his career, if you plug him in innings 6 through 8 somewhere, he normally performs at a pretty high level. With the White Sox, he had to be their closer, didn't perform at a high level. How do you feel the Phillies will use him?
I think he's going to be there to get big outs at the end of the game, and that may not be the ninth inning. It might be the seventh inning. It might be the eighth inning. The way I see them using the back of their bullpen is this. They have three guys who they really, really like late in games. That's David Robertson, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and then Hector Neris, who, after going down to the minors last year, came back and you know, was one of the best relievers in baseball over the last 2 months. It was incredible. I think you're going to see them interchange those guys. And could it be that one of those guys rises, you know, to a quote-unquote traditional closer at some point during the season? Yeah, I think that's possible. I think in an ideal world they would have a traditional closer, but I think they look at those three guys as interchangeable right now, and maybe there's one night where Robertson pitches a quick and eighth inning and cruises through it, and then they send him back out there for the ninth, knowing that they don't necessarily need to have him the next day, because if they have a late situation where they need a save, maybe it's Dominguez or maybe it's Neris. I think those three guys are interchangeable. They're not all the same, but I think they have a certain level of trust in all three of those guys, and the bullpen is a deep unit, and they're going to need this bullpen. I mean, this rotation is unproven at the back, and I think if they do get some five-inning starts from Pivetta and Velasquez and Eflin, they're going to be okay with it because they think this bullpen is a strength, and they're going to lean on these guys.
And, of course, the front means Aaron Nola, and they signed him to what I refer to as the arbitration contract. Let's avoid that problem. What do they need from Nola? Is Nola the kind of guy that they're going to need seven innings out of each time through just to save that bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, they need Nola to make 33 starts this year, you know,
right.
and he might be the, you know, like he is the most irreplaceable guy on this team right now. I don't think
yes.
There's any question about it. If Aaron Nola goes down for any certain period of time, they're in a lot of trouble. I don't think there's any way around that. And I think ideally they'd have a little more depth for the rotation. They'd have you know, some backup plans. They have some guys at AAA they like, but you know, when you're talking about Aaron Nolan, ace caliber, a Cy Young type pitcher, they need him out there every fifth day, and it's as simple as that. And you know, he may not be the same kind of guy he was last year. Maybe he has an ERA in the high twos instead of the mid twos, and that's fine. They need him every fifth day, though, period. I mean, they cannot have him suffer an injury.
No, they can't, and that's the key part to all this. But I got to go back to Kapler, though. How did you evaluate his season last year as a manager? Look, he has certainly a modern approach to this, an analytics approach to it. We know that. How did you evaluate it?
A very massive and public learning process.
Yeah.
I give him credit in some spots. I think he made adjustments. He did. I mean, remember early in the season last year, which feels like forever ago, I mean, he was doing some things that were just bizarre. And September, you know, was really it was going to be a tough spot for any manager, I think. They were trying to just squeeze as much as they possibly could out of a flawed roster. And let's remember this. Like, they were in first place in the first week of August, and that was with the worst defense in baseball, one of the worst defenses in baseball in the last like 20 years, if you want to look at some metrics. They did it with an inconsistent offense, and they did it with a pitching staff that was really sort of up and down. It didn't have many proven commodities there, but they were in first place in the first week of August, and some of that was because of the manager. I do believe that. I mean, he pressed a lot of the right buttons during the middle of that season, which we kind of forget. We remember the beginning of the season when it was a little weird and uncomfortable and certainly unorthodox, and we remember September when, you know, everything just went crazy. It was a free fall, and they were just throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what would stick. But what we don't remember was the middle, was where, like, you know, they were pretty good, and they were sort of on cruise control, and the manager was part of that. He made adjustments, and I think there is no one, you know, he's on the hot seat here. I think there's no way around it. I mean, now they have assembled this roster. The expectations are higher. They have to win, and if they don't win early in the season, I already know where a lot of the fingers are going to get pointed. I'm sure you know this too, Steve. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, it's going to be pointed at Gabe Kapler, and I think he's a pretty smart guy. He knows this too. I mean, he knows that the expectations are huge, and that he has to deliver here. And I think the way that he is going to do that is sort of by backing off a bit. I think you'll see him still be aggressive with the way he manages his bullpen, but. And certainly what we were talking about before with lineup construction and sort of how he decides who plays, he's going to be more hands-off. I mean, I think this lineup, this roster now, speaks for itself. It doesn't need, you know, that constant day-to-day tinkering. Just put him out there, and let's see what happens.
And finally, about Rhys Hoskins, sometimes just being in your natural spot relaxes you even more. Have you sensed that about him now that he's back at first base?
I think so. I think, you know, what has relaxed them even more is that they've gone out and added these sort of veteran guys, lineup stabilizers around him who, you know, this just takes the pressure off of Rhys Hoskins. You know, he had to be the guy last year, and we forget that last year was his first full season in the majors, and he was playing a new position. It was a lot put on Rhys Hoskins last year. They asked him to be that middle-of-the-order guy. They asked him to play a new position. They asked him to be the clubhouse leader. It was a lot. And, you know, now he can kind of just sit back. All the attention is on Bryce Harper. All the attention is on Andrew McCutchen and Gene Segura and all these guys. The attention is on the manager. And now Rhys Hoskins can just do his thing. And he was not a Gold Glove first baseman before. Let's not forget that. I mean, he will have issues at first base. But it is his position. He is more comfortable there. He can focus on the little things at first base, whereas he was focusing on everything in left field. He's seemed more relaxed this spring, and I think, you know, having number three there definitely, you know, maybe Rhys Hoskins might be the biggest benefactor of Bryce Harper. I think that might be fair to say, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, thanks so much. It's the first time we've had you. It was great. We hope to have you many other times after this. Thank you.
Yeah, they're an interesting team now, huh?
Yeah. Oh, I thought they were interesting last year. Like you said, up until the first week of August, where they were in first place. I thought they were interesting last year. I thought they were a year ahead of themselves. Now, they've taken that year ahead of themselves, and they've added some parts to it where now they're maybe 6 months ahead of schedule.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I can't wait.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, back with more from Chicago in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us. Of course, we're your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. It's going to be a very interesting, fun season, I think. Night in, night out. And we'll have every game for you here at News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Yeah, 2 weeks from today. Cranking it up in the afternoon on the 28th against the Braves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Now, here, of course, the Cubs and the White Sox. The Cubs are still really good. The White Sox have got a long way to go. And we're flying in yesterday, and Jim Ferry, the assistant coach, says, he said, that's Soldier Field. I said, yeah, it's Soldier Field. I said, now look to the left window. I said, that's Comiskey Park, you know, U.S. Cellular Field. I mean, to me, it's Comiskey Park. So there's the United Center. He said, where's Wrigley Field? I said, no, we're coming in from the south because we flew into Midway. I said, if we were flying into O'Hare, you would see Wrigley Field to the north. So, yeah, it's also interesting. You see what they were talking about, the rules for baseball, what they would like to do this year? There's certain things they want to do this year and then implement next year. And I think they've got to be careful about this. Baseball has existed as a prime sport here since the mid to late 1800s. Okay? And when you're sitting there and you want to, I don't mind tinkering with the game, so let's get to something that's tinkering with the game. Obviously, the designated hitter tinkers with the game. I am also a firm believer that when it's all said and done, both the National League and the American League will have more, will both have the DH. That's why the Bryce Harper thing for 13 years, he could still be a productive hitter for them down the road, because I think at that point they're going to have the DH. But when you look at what they're trying to do, here's some of the tweaks of the rules for this year. And this is important. Number one, a single trade deadline. I like that. I don't like this, okay, you trade July 31st, then you clear waivers, and you trade August 31st. Just have one. An all-star game, election day, who cares? $1 million bonus for the home run derby winner, who cares? But then in 2020... roster expansion to 26 players, good. I like it. But a three-batter minimum for pitchers, I don't know about that. That's the one I look at, and I said, I just don't know. I like the fact they want to eliminate August trades. I think at some point you've got your team. Your team is your team. I don't mind making the game move, but part of making the game move is to enforce the existing rules. Tell everybody they must have 1 foot inside the batter's box. And then guess what? The pitcher's got 20. These are already rules that exist. a foot in the batter's box already exists. They just don't follow it. The 22nd pitch rule, that already exists. They just don't follow it. Follow the rules. I don't think you need to tinker with it much more than that. There's still a lot of great things about baseball. And the three-batter minimum, I'm not on with that.
Maybe we'll get into a cycle, don't know how long that would last, when there won't be as many foul balls hit.
Well, yeah, but again, it's the stepping out of the box. It's the messing. Look, just get the. It's amazing. When nobody's on base, the game moves. When nobody's on base, the game moves because the reason it happens is the pitcher, boom, gets the ball back, gets the signal, drives the plate. It's once somebody gets on base, then they're taught to slow down and nothing moves.
I love an old-fashioned pitcher's duel, but the problem is you don't have the scoring and people complain then there's not enough offense.
Well, I think it doesn't bother me if you have one game that's 12-11 and the next game is 2-1. That's the glory of baseball. Part of this is, at one point, Liverpool played a game at Fenway Park, soccer.
The Fighting Jeff Tarmans.
And they're talking to the baseball players, and they said, well, how many games do you play here? And they said, we play 162. The Liverpool guys looked at them and said, you play 162 games? The Premier League, they play 38. So, well, we don't run as much as you do.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Conference tournament's going on right now. Tough one for Bucknell last night. Look, Colgate's had a great year. Sometimes it's your time, it's your year. And Colgate now 15-1 at home. Colgate now winning 11 in a row. Hey, sometimes it's their time. Matt Lengel's done a great job with them, just like Nathan Davis has done a great job with Bucknell. Yeah, the way it is. And in this particular time, it's their time. Colgate gets the automatic bid, their 24th win of the season.
Yeah, you were breaking down some of the strong points for Colgate, not just in this tournament, but going into the tournament, too, and just some of the impressive shooting that they've been able to accumulate. And last night, second half alone, 71%.
Now, here in this one, earlier today, Ohio State beat Indiana 79-75. Ohio State had a 19-point lead. Then Indiana got within two. C.J. Jackson did a couple free throws, finally put it away at the end. And that's how they won. But Ohio State literally controlled that entire game. Maryland was down a dozen at the break. Now they're down seven. It's 35-28 Nebraska with 16-16 to go in the game there. Penn State, Minnesota is next at 7. We're on beginning at 6:30. And then the nightcap will be Illinois against Iowa. And then tomorrow, four more games. It used to be in these tournaments that the day that you absolutely had to be at, if you're a college basketball fan, was quarterfinal day at the conference tournament. Whether it was the ACC, the Big Ten, Big East, whatever it may be. Well, now because of these double byes, they've now created two of those days. There are four games today. A lot of excitement here in town. There'll be four games here tomorrow. Same story. So what's happened in the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC with these double byes is you've now created 2 days with four games each. And that has created more juice and fan interest at the conference tournament. You have four new teams here tomorrow. Wisconsin, Purdue, Michigan State, and Michigan. Some of those fans have already started to roll in to go with the fans that are already here. So that's what's happening. It used to be quarterfinal day was the day. And you want to be in quarterfinal day, believe me. But they've created now two of these with four games on each day. That's the interesting part of how they now script this with the double buys in the SEC, the Big Ten, and the ACC. And Duke finally gets going tonight. Hey, did you hear Zion Williamson's playing? I think the sport is saved. No? You're not buying? This is, by the way, if you want to know why there's a lot of publicity directed about Zion Williamson, let's be blunt about it. This is a very thin NBA draft on high quality. I mean, you look at Williamson, Barrett, Ja Morant. That's about it. When the season began, everybody was telling us that Romeo Langford was the fifth best player in the freshman class. No offense, if that's the fifth best player in the freshman class, that's a thin freshman class. And I'm not insulting Romeo Langford here. Romeo Langford did fine this year. Romeo Langford averaged 16 points a game. But he was not an awesome, spectacular, off-the-charts player. I'm expecting him to go to the draft. I mean, I'm expecting that Langford will be one and done. But it's also a very thin draft. It's also very interesting with the net. That's the next part that's going to be very interesting in all of this. The net rankings. I've talked about this before, and I'll mention it again. It's very important. Everybody scheduled in college basketball 2 years ago. And then after all the schedules were done, they then introduced the quad system, quad 1, 2, 3, 4. That's after people had scheduled. This year, after everybody had scheduled, they introduced the net. What's interesting about the net is this. They have not told a single person what is involved in the metrics of the net. It replaces RPI. So the RPI was an outdated dinosaur of a system. It had its time, it had its purpose, but it was an outdated dinosaur system in today's era of advanced analytics. But nobody knows what they put into the net. I mean, to me, they ought to just use the Ken Pom rankings because we know what goes into that and what he puts into it makes sense. But you notice what has happened with the net. Have you noticed what's happened with that, Sean? The net, which, by the way, I think we do believe that part of it is margin of victory that is put in here. But the net does favor, guess what the net favors? In the end, Power 5 teams. So if you see relatively few mid-major teams on the tournament board, and that's been a complaint the last couple of years about fewer and fewer mid-major teams on the board, I think you're going to find a culprit in that is going to be the net rankings. The net rankings seem to weigh heavier toward Power 5. And guess what? You will hear on Sunday night in explaining why Team A from Power 5 Conference is in, but Team B from mid-major that had a really good year, they're going to say, well, gee, the net ranking showed they're ranked here. I mean, I don't know if you have it in front of you. You probably don't right now, Sean, but like what Colgate's net would be. I don't have my computer in front of me. But Colgate won 24 games this year. Now, the Patriots doesn't quite qualify as a mid-major like, say, the Missouri Valley does, like the Mountain West does in some ways. Take, for example, Lipscomb. A lot of people think Lipscomb is a team that has the kind of record, at least, that people would consider to be, hey, maybe they're a possible at-large team. Now, Wofford would have fallen into that. Now, Wofford won, though. Lipscomb did not. Do you, in the end, do we end up finding, in the end, that in the explanation on Sunday night, we hear a lot about the net as in a fallback? Well, gee, in the net, X is ranked here and Y is ranked here. See where I'm going, Sean? I think it's a very interesting, because nobody, they have not revealed what goes into it. And I think you need to know what goes into it if you're in a college basketball office. Not because of what's going to happen on Sunday in New York. This year, the selection's in New York City. Not what happens Sunday in New York. You want to be able to set up a schedule in April and May for 19-20 where you feel like, okay, this is what they're looking for and why, so I'd like to set up my schedule based and take me potentially in that direction. Nothing is foolproof, obviously. But wouldn't you like to know how to schedule in your non-conference? The Big Ten's already gone to 20 games this year. That helps Power Five schools. The ACC next year is also going to 20 games. I just think it's something that's very interesting to look at, because the RPI is something that, as I mentioned, is happened to be an outdated system, which in its time was really, really good.
I see Bucknell's net at 152. I'm still trying to find Colgate.
Oh, I'm going to guess Colgate. I'm going to guess look around 110.
Okay.
See, I would say, so go between, what you said, Bucknell's 150, so one, I'd go between 110 and 150, somewhere in there.
Yeah, they went from 150 to 152. Colgate went from 135 to 128.
So 128.
Yeah, 24-10, 9-9 on the road, and obviously, right, as mentioned earlier, only one loss at home.
I mean, the next part I would look at, and now this might be hard for you to find, but Lipscomb. Wofford, I would say if you were to look at Wofford, I'd say look at Wofford between 50 and 70.
Okay. I'll scroll over.
On the net. I'd say Wofford would be 50 to 70. Now, Wofford's in, so Wofford's not as...
Penn
no
State's
issue.
At 49.
Yeah, and we know that.
Lipscomb's 47.
Lipscomb's ahead of Penn State, so they're 47. Okay, so Wofford's then's got to be in the 30s. No, you know what? Wofford might be in the 20s. You know that? Because I think Wofford, I said the other day when they won, I thought they were a 7.
Wofford's at 13.
Okay, good for them.
Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, Houston, Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Michigan State, Texas Tech, Michigan. That's your top 10. Houston. Virginia Tech, Purdue, Wofford, LSU, Wisconsin, that's 11 to 15. Buffalo, Auburn, Nevada, Florida State, Kansas, 16 to 20.
Okay. And what's heavily weighted in there? Power Five teams.
Yeah.
It's fine by me because Penn State's a Power Five team. So that doesn't bother me at all. But I know a lot of people get very concerned this time of year with the thought process of the mid-major. Yeah, I understand that.
St. Mary's State put at 34 despite upsetting Gonzaga in the tournament.
Yeah, but that's all right. That's about where they should be. 34 is right. Well, I've got to head over, my man. I've got to head over to the arena. We're on at 6:30. I know it's hard to believe, but there appears to be some traffic out here. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, when you told me the amount of time it would take to get from the hotel to the gym, even though you're not all
well,
that
actually,
far away from it.
Actually, it was close because we flew into Midway. We did not fly into O'Hare.
Okay.
So it was closer. It wasn't that bad, actually. Today, going to shoot around, which was over at Illinois-Chicago, UIC. We got there. I think that influenced them moving up 5 minutes. Plus, I think they want to get on the court the second they can tonight so they can get some shots in, because obviously they didn't get a chance to get any shots in the arena today. Let's just see here. What is the score of yonder game between Maryland and Nebraska? Known, by the way, in New England as Nebraska. All I know is that one point they'd cut it to 7, Maryland. Did you know Zion Williamson's coming back tonight?
Oh, yeah. We'll mention that in the headlines to close out the show.
To be honest with you, I feel like the sport's been saved.
ESPN suits going,
whew. Oh, this is great. We're going to get viewers.
Huskers up 2 touchdowns, 44-30 over Maryland. They're just under the under 12 timeout, second half.
What is going on, man? It's that momentum thing. I'm telling you, it is the momentum thing. I've always been a firm believer in it, that the team that wins the day before while the other team is sitting, and you want the double bye. Believe me, you want it. But there's something to be said about the old double bye, and the other team is out there and they won a game. Now, once you go to play multiple games like that, legs come into play. But, hey. All right. So we'll talk to you at 6:30 from the United Center here in Chicago on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you're listening to us with the Steve Jones Show podcast, thank you for the download. If you haven't subscribed, it is absolutely free. Go to either Google Play or the Apple App Store, or if you have an iPhone or an iPad, just open up your Apple Podcast app and search Steve Jones Show, hit subscribe, and we'll drop the shows right to your smartphone and tablet. So if you're an NFL fan, and if you missed our interview earlier today with NFL writer, New York Giants beat reporter, Matt Lombardo from NJ.com, we'll get that later on our Steve Jones Show podcast. And you can always access 3 months of shows. We've got them archived on our homepage at SteveJonesShow.com. All right, Steve's hopping on the bus, heading to the United Center for hoops tonight as the Big Ten men's basketball tournament continues, Penn State, Minnesota. Steve and DJ will be on at 6:30 tonight. We'll hear from head coach Patrick Chambers, and then the play-by-play with the guys at 7 courtside. Winner of tonight's game, Penn State, Minnesota, will get Purdue tomorrow night. Of course, last night on Eagle 107, Bucknell season wrapping up. It was a Colgate, a 94-80 winner in the Patriot League Championship game in Hamilton, New York. Final games for Kimball McKenzie and Nate Sestina. Nate ended up with 21 points. He fouled out with 4:21 to go. Kimball McKenzie scored 16 of 23 points in the second half. Bucknell was down 13 at halftime. They were able to cut the lead to 2, but then back-to-back possessions led to some turnovers. And then Colgate continued their hot shooting, 71% shooting in the second half alone. So Colgate gets the automatic bid to March Madness. They're now 24-10, and this will be their first time in the tournament and also their first time winning the Patriot League tournament since 1996. Congratulations to the Bison on another great year as they wrapped up their campaign with a record of 21-12. We do have some NFL news to share with you. Breaking here from this past hour, Oakland Raiders, they have released backup quarterback A.J. McCarron. So the Raiders need a backup quarterback. The only two quarterbacks now on the roster, Derek Carr and Nathan Peterman. Wonder what Antonio Brown's thoughts are on that. Speaking of wide receivers, Pittsburgh Steelers signing former Indianapolis Colt and a former Jacksonville Jaguar, Dante Moncrief. They reached agreement on a 2-year deal. Moncrief signed the contract earlier today at the Pittsburgh Steelers football complex. Moncrief was a third-round pick of Indianapolis back in 2014, spent his first 4 years in Indianapolis. He signed with Jacksonville last year. His best season was 2015, his second year with Andrew Luck at quarterback, caught 64 passes, 733 yards, and 5 touchdowns. His time in Jacksonville, not all that impressive last year, 48 passes, 668 yards, and 3 scores. He is 6'2", 220. LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade suspended amidst recently allegations of involvement in a pay-for-play scandal. He says he's ready to resume his duties as Tigers head coach. He feels he should be back to coaching. He issued a statement to sports media outlets today. He informed the athletic director, the school president, and the board of supervisors that he should be allowed to coach again. Right, quite a few people there got a nice little laugh out of that. New York Jets yesterday, as we zip back to the NFL, the Jets signed Le'Veon Bell. It was not the contract he had hoped for, no matter what he'll say. Pittsburgh Steelers offered him a $70 million deal before holding out last year and left over $14 million on the table, but signed a four-year, $52.5 million contract late Tuesday night, and that has made New York Jets running back Isaiah Crowell expendable. Crowell was released earlier today, just turned 26. He was a one-and-done with the Jets after being with the Cleveland Browns for four seasons. So Penn State, Minnesota tonight here on WKOK 630, the airtime with Steve and Dick Girardi. Tip-off will be at 7. Winner gets Purdue, so we'll find out if Steve is in Chicago tomorrow or he is back home in the cozy confines of the Sunbury Motor Studio. One thing's for sure, whether Steve's in Chicago or not, we will have Steve's brother, Kevin Jones, the most interesting man in Connecticut, joining us. I'm Sean Carey. Thanks for keeping company with us. Late Day News Roundup with Zach Klein coming up. Get details on the former priest at St. Pius X in Seals Grove arrested today for child abuse. That'll be our lead in the Late Day News Roundup with Zach. Zach with you at 5:06. He'll be with you till 6:30 when we go to Chicago for hoops and Penn State basketball in the men's tournament. Talk to you tomorrow. News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.